ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhalila, Chapter 10, Text 144. Translation, there's no commentary on this verse. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. I'll read the next two verses. There is a purport to the second of these three verses, but it's not philosophical. It's just giving the reference. Bhatta kahe guru ragya hoi balavan. Guru agya na long hie shastra praman. Bhatta kahe guru ragya hoi balavan. Guru agya na long hie shastra praman. Bhatta kahe guru ragya hoi balavan. Guru agya na long hie shastra praman. Sarva bhoma bhattacharya said, the order of the spiritual master is very strong and cannot be disobeyed. That is the injunction of the shastras, the revealed scriptures. Next verse. Sasushruvan matari bhagavena pitur niyogat prahritang dvishadvat pratyagrihid agrajas shashanam tad Agnya Guranam hi avicharaniya. Being ordered by his father, Parashuram killed his mother, Renuka, just as if she were an enemy. When Lakshman, the younger brother of Lord Ramachandra, heard of this, he immediately engaged himself in the service of his elder brother and accepted his orders. The order of the spiritual master must be obeyed without consideration. Purport. This is a quotation from the Raghu Vansha, chapter 14, text 46. Lord Ramachandra's statement to Sita given below is from the Ramayana, Ayodhya Kanda, chapter 29, text 9. Nirvicharam guru ragnya maya karya mahatmanaha shriyo hyevam bhavatyascha mama chaiva visheshataha. The order of a great personality like a father must be executed without consideration because there is good fortune in such an order for both of us. In particular, there is good fortune for me. I elected to speak on these verses today because a little later this morning, is scheduled an initiation ceremony of the physical mother of Keshav Gokul Ananda Prabhu, who will thus become his younger sister. But still to be treated as, well, even sister is also to be treated as mother. Even the daughter is to be addressed as mother. At least this Swayambhuva Manu did to his, it's related in Srimad Bhagavatam, to his daughter, Devahuti. So this is a very solemn occasion and joyful. These two adjectives don't seem to fit together. How can something be both solemn and joyful? It's solemn in as much as it's very grave, serious, the commitment to, after many, many lifetimes, having the opportunity to commit oneself with vows to following a mode of life which voluntarily one accepts many restrictions within that. that is very grave, because the vow that is taken, if it's not followed, then it becomes a very great offense on the part of the person who doesn't follow. So it's very serious. It's a great commitment. It's also very joyful because after many, many lifetimes, one gets the opportunity to take this vow by which one is officially or formally inducted into the life of Krishna consciousness, which is by nature blissful. Krishna is blissful. His service is blissful. His devotees are blissful. So it's both solemn and joyful. These verses quoted just now, they present the standard traditional understanding about accepting the order of the Guru in Agya Guru Naam Hi Avicharaniya. The order of the Gurus, it's not something that should be considered. And it's put in another way in the next verse that's quoted. Nirvicharam Gurur Agya. So avichar, nirvichar means without consideration. That means you should just do it, that's all. Just do it, because it's without consideration. Why? Because it's accepted that whatever the Guru says is for my best interest. It's not that I'm being exploited. It's for my best interest. Well, there are various reasons. One reason is that it's by dharma one should do so. These quotes from Rama Leela, how Lakshman served his elder brother. This is dharma to do so. One doesn't have to consider why or how or what will be the consequences. Of course, the acharyas do so. What are the consequences of doing so and what are the consequences of not doing so? But basically, it's accepted by all followers of dharma that whatever is prescribed in the Shastra, and particularly by Guru, that should be followed without considering. Without, it's accepted. What the Guru says, that must be good for me and good for everyone. And Guru means representative of Krishna, so it's all meant for my good, even if it appears not to be. Ramchandra was ordered to go to the forest. It doesn't appear to be good, but he accepted it. That's the order of the Guru. We have to accept it. Even there were various, even his own father wanted to retract the order. And others, there are pretty much everyone who was concerned with the whole matter, they made various petitions to Ramachandra Bhagavan, including Bharat, on whose behalf this whole scheme was dreamed up. Including him, he came back to Ayodhya, found the news, and said, "I don't want to be the king. Ram should be the king." And went out and met Rama at Chitrakoot and petitioned him to come back and accept the throne. But Rama wouldn't, because he thought that I should follow the order of my guru, my father. And Lakshman, considering this, he also wanted to serve Ramachandra, who is guru to him, as elder brother. So this is the general understanding, that one accepts the order of the guru. This means a specific order, do this, do that, without asking, well, what's this, why this, that and the other. Of course, there are exceptions to that also. Dali Maharaj is a famous one. Another one is Bhishma, who to his guru Parashuram, Parashuram wasn't his guru in the matter of teaching Shastra or Dharma, or the principles of Dharma, but he was his Astra Guru. He taught him how to fight. But when Parashuram tried to force Bhishma to marry Amba, then Bhishma said, Guru Rapya Viliptasya Kaya Kaya Majanataha Utpanda Pratipandasya Parityago Vidhiyate. Even if one is a guru, and that's not a small word, it's a short word, two syllables, but it's a very heavy word. One of the meanings is heavy, heavy with import, so very important. If he's not yoga yukta, he's not fixed, in the Supreme. If he doesn't know the difference between what should be done and what should not be done, if he is fallen from the principles of dharma, he should be fully rejected. So we have two opposite instructions, and they both come in Srila Prabhupada's books. So you can see how different ideas come up, different interpretations. Yes, you should follow a guru without consideration, says right here in Prabhupada's books. And someone says, no, you should reject, you have to consider, you have to reject if the guru is not teaching properly. Both of the things are there. So what to do? Which one do you want to choose? Well, there's no reason, there's no meaning to accepting a guru unless one is prepared to follow. But in cases where there is some flagrant violation of what should be done and what not should be done, one should understand that. The injunction to follow the guru's order without consideration is open to misuse, and commonly in this Kali Yuga, and commonly within ISKCON, to be quite frank, as most of you probably know. It has been misused. Maybe not commonly, but at least we can say not uncommonly, that the guru may exploit the disciple for sinful purposes. That wasn't expected previously. It was extreme. Who can be a guru? The general convention. And that's stated in Shastra. It says guru should be a brahmana. Brahmana means they're raised in families where there's no question of sinful activities. Just like the lady who I'm supposed to initiate later this morning, she has to recite four regulated principles, but practically due to the culture she was raised in, there's no question in her life of sinful activities, unless you want to include drinking tea. Yeah, it's kind of not really sinful, but it's a lot different from the average Mancunian's way of life. You know what a Mancunian is? No. It's a resident of Manchester. Drinking tea, other principles, maybe little this, there, and that. But there's been no question of very sinful life in her life due to the culture. Although I was told yesterday, that whole, even though that's been going on for generations in those families, that following the regulative principles, even without drinking tea before the British made their appearance on the scene in India. Now they're all becoming degraded. Not all, but many of them. So in the Brahmana families, there was no question of any sinful life. There may be meat eating on certain occasions. In certain Brahmanas, they accept meat, but not. That's only if it's offered in a yagya. Yagya shishta, the word is used in Bhagavad Gita. But for a Brahmana, there's no question of touching alcohol or any intoxicant, any such thing. I've just been listening to a series of interviews by the late Brahmananda Prabhu with Padmanabha Goswami of the Radharaman temple in Vrindavan. And Brahmananda Prabhu asked him, well, what happens if because to serve Radharaman, the brahmanas, obviously they're family brahmanas, but they have to be very pure in all their habits and everything they do. So Brahmananda asked, well, what happens if someone goes off? And Padmanabha Goswami said, well, it doesn't happen. He says, I heard in the past there have been some cases, but it doesn't happen. Our culture is like that. There are so many families there, but none of them eat meat or gamble or have illicit sex or let's say they don't have sexual life outside of marriage. Intoxication, pan, they may. I'm not sure whether they take pan or not. Mostly, the brahmanas take pan, but that's a specialty actually in our sub sampradaya of the Gauriya sampradaya. Otherwise, Gauriyas may Krishna. It's offered to Krishna and it may take as prasad. We don't do it. I don't know if it's still done, but we always used to, when I joined, both in the manor and in Soho Street, a very place at the time, we used to offer daily pan to Krishna. Is that still going on? Who's there? Who's worshiping?
No. We have done in the past, but not regularly.
Used to be daily, and in those days, getting things like that from India wasn't so easy, but it was daily. I don't know what they did with the remnants. Often when I go in the Srinathji, the Vallabh Sampradaya temples in Gujarat mostly. And often they give us pan prasadam. But anyway, we don't take it. But I'm just making the point, there was no question of being very sinful. And for one who is, or even sinful in any way, very pure life. And especially one who assumes the role of initiating others, there's no question of being very sinful, and they've been trained from birth in Shastra, and there's a question of pride also. Not pride in the sense of Dambho Darpa Bhimanascha, the demoniac pride of conceit, arrogance, all that kind of pride, but a sense of pride that we have to uphold the dignity of our family. We can't do anything wrong because I am a son of this whole dynasty. So we have to uphold the dignity. If any one member of our family behaves wrongly, it reflects badly on the whole family. So there was no, and especially those who were gurus, they were expected to be very realized, and no doubt they were. Were and maybe now also, even in those who come in such families, it is a special birth, no doubt, if they're still following the culture. Although by the influence of Kali Yuga, in many of the traditional families who are initiating, Srila Prabhupada talks about them in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita in his purport, families they traditionally initiate, but unfortunately, the culture is breaking down now. Although, otherwise, they were very nicely following. Last Kartik, I visited the Shyamananda temple in Vrindavan, and the Mahant there. I visited twice the Gopi Vallapur in Bengal, where he comes from. So I saw the whole family very nicely following everything. The Shyamananda Sampradaya. When I went there, he told me that, oh, when I last saw you, I was going to school in his village, Gopi Vallapur. So nice, they do nice worship, they study Shastra. Maybe not to the extent they did previously. Previously, in their family, every generation had very good scholars, writing books and very deeply scholarly. Maybe that culture isn't there now so much, but they're devotees, fully devotees. And there's no, it would be absolutely shocking and scandalous and totally unexpected if they would do anything wrong. Of course, there may be some dispute over some legal matters, something like that. But as far as their personal behavior is spotless. And such persons, their order is expected to be perfect. That if they tell you something, all right, this person, he's guru wise guru, representative of God, in contact with God. Whatever he says, even if materially it appears to be disadvantageous for myself, still to be followed. There's a merit just in following. Even if it appears to be wrong, the spirit of following, that in itself is appreciated by Krishna. In the modern age especially, we have to be more discriminating. There was an incident in New York in the early 1970s. Not an incident, there was a whole episode where the wife of the GBC member who was resident there, she was having chicken offered to the deities and taking chicken, among other things. And some devotees thought, well, everyone thought it was very strange, but some devotees in their innocence thought that, no, GBC, we should just follow. Those were the days when, by Prabhupada's order, everyone just followed the GBC without questioning. So they thought, no, we'll just follow. We won't say anything. And when Srila Prabhupada came, the matter was brought to him, and he said, it's good that the devotees followed. The spirit to follow was good. But he said, for the senior devotees, they should have said, they should have protested. In fact, one of them did. That was Gopal Krishna Prabhu at the time. Now Gopal Krishna Goswami. He's the only one who raised the matter to Srila Prabhupada. Others were waiting for Prabhupada. Gopal Krishna Prabhu wrote a letter to Prabhupada and said, this is going on. Others waited and said, let's wait till Srila Prabhupada comes and ask him. Because they had the feeling that, well, if it's the GBC, he must be right. He's appointed by Srila Prabhupada. So that was innocence or naivete. Blind following is not very laudable, but especially now, the history of what our movement has seen, it wouldn't be very wise to follow blindly. But that is the general understanding, that trust should be there. Nowadays, within ISKCON, and Gauriya Math, many of the gurus, most of them don't come from traditional Brahmana backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Or traditional backgrounds of any type, unless you want to talk about traditional British, but that's not a very good tradition spiritually. Brahmana by quality, it's supposed to be accepted as a Brahmana by the purificatory process. Yata kancha tam yati kangsyang rasa vidhana tatha. Tata, what's the verse? Tata diksha vidhanena nrinam jayate, dvijatvam jayate nrinam. By the process of pancharatriki diksha, the initiation according to the pancharatri process, any human can be accepted as twice born. The commentary of Sanatana Goswami specifies, Runam means women also. They can be accepted as suitable for worshipping deities and twice born. They're born. The birth is Janmana Jayate Shudra. By by birth, one is it's simply to be born, that's not elevated, but sanskara bhavidvija, by reformatory process, one becomes twice born. And the pancharatuki diksha is actually considered. Yeah, there's the first birth, there's the physical birth, shukra janma. Then there is the vaidiki diksha in families of vaishyas, kshatriyas, and brahmanas. So then one's called dvija, then trija, three times born. Then one takes spiritual initiation. So by that purificatory process, one can also attain to the status of a brahmana and initiate others. And to accept initiation means to have full faith that who is initiating, who is guiding, they can guide me all the way back to Krishna. So it's a very, as I said, it's very solemn. It's a very solemn undertaking, both on the part of the guru and on the part of the disciple. In Brahmana families, it's very natural that even a young man can initiate, because it's the whole culture that they've been raised in. They've been prepared and trained for that since their birth, and it's a family tradition. Of course, this the idea of a family guru, that may have its disadvantages also. Srila Prabhupada writes that, and again in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita in one purport, that there are many families in which each generation they produce acharyas. But then if it becomes a, if the one thinks that, okay, that I'm a guru by birth, and my father's disciples' children will become my disciples, and it becomes a profession, and one is not interested in the spiritual uplift of his disciples, but is simply interested in making some show of spirituality, then such a family guru is cheating. It's not helpful either for himself or for the disciples. Srila Prabhupada was initiated by a family guru. It's mentioned in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. When he was young, he was initiated, but it seems that Srila Prabhupada never took it very seriously. And when he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he understood, this is my eternal guru. Chokudano dilo jay janme janme prabhu se. It's not that simply by being as a child put in some ceremony and so-called initiated, that one has to accept such a person as a guru, but one who gives me chokudano diloje, he who has given me the gift of eyes, literally chakshudan, the gift of eyes, spiritual vision, the ability to see things as they actually are. Such a person is my lord, my master, birth after birth. So that's what's going on in this solemn and joyful occasion. The attitude of the disciple should be to follow. That's all. In my own case, especially we were discussing yesterday about these directions about Varnashram and this and that. In my own case, I tend to be rather cautious in instructing disciples individually and personally. General instructions for everyone. But giving instructions to devotees, what we have to remember that we're in a very different society to that in which traditionally guruship and discipleship, the disciple-guru relationship would be conducted. We live in a very different society. In traditional guru-disciple relationship, from the very culture, there's a very deep understanding. It's completely part of the culture. That everyone, unless you're a Shudra or less, has a guru. And Shudras can also have by the Vaishnava or Shaiva Pancharatriki system or Tantra, but we don't include that. how one behaves with the guru, it's not exactly analogous, but somewhat or to a large extent. You know, everyone knows how to deal with the Baba. It's fixed what the Baba's duties are in Varnashram society. He comes and cuts their hair and shaves their head once a month, maybe in some people's cases twice a month. He comes to weddings. The Baba's wife manicures the nails and applies the auspicious decorations on the time of marriage, and she has a duty to do also. So it's all clear what everyone does. The potter supplies pots and these bati, what's that little dish, very small dish for lights, for Deepavali or for pujas. So and in return they're given a bag of rice or two bags of rice from everyone at the harvest. And it's all clear. So how to deal with the potter, how to deal with the Baba, it's all very clear. How to deal with the Brahman, how to deal with Guru, it's all very clear and straightforward. And people can hardly imagine any other kind of society. Of course, Indian society hasn't been stable for several hundred years. There's been so many invasions apart from invasions from beyond the borders of India, fighting between various kings, and the Vedic culture has been under attack, not only from Islam but from within by various wrong interpretations or various interpretations. There are various schools. The Vaishnavas and the Shaivas were very much opposed to each other in the area now known as Tamil Nadu. The Jains and the Hindus were very much opposed to each other. But more or less, the society, it was very stable. And everyone knew how to deal. But now we live in a different world and people are trained in a different way. They're not really trained at all. The concept of training people so that they can become responsible citizens. Well, they're in school to some extent, but I don't know how much nowadays teachers are expected to impart character training. The main idea is just to learn something so you can get a certificate which allows you to go on to the next level or at least to get out of school. Character training isn't there. And even if there is, the whole emphasis of say, do your own thing, fulfill yourself, it's very self-centered. So the whole idea of submission to a guru is another whole concept which is highly repugnant to people, generally for people raised in the Western world. Yesterday I spoke about some concepts which are generally repugnant to people in the Western world, that of hierarchical society, specifically Varnashram society, and that of the role of and perception of women in Varnashram society. And here's another one, submission to guru. Some idea of that has come through Buddhism, in the Western world. I think Buddhism is much bigger in America than it is here. Is it? Is it quite prominent here also? Somewhat. Somewhat, yeah. I guess the Dalai Lama comes around here to talks all his... Anyway, no need to come talk about him here. Now, so some idea, and then even as a kid, I remember the TV show Kung Fu, and it shows a guru teaching Kung Fu. There's some idea as that, but it's just like there's pop psychology, so there's pop spiritualism. And the whole idea of submission, the whole culture, you can't get the culture of guru and disciple from watching Kung Fu on TV, or even the Buddhist idea. Anyway, Buddhism, it's within, or it's an offshoot of Indian Vedic culture, but it rejects the Vedas. And even though there are gurus, they're not really gurus, and nothing is really real anyway. And it's remarkable, let's be euphemistic here. So the whole culture of surrendering to a guru, even in India, nowadays, guru means who? Who's able to make the most hype? Who's able to promote himself or herself as being loving, compassionate, spiritual, and all fluff and nothing there? They fit, those who can fit the stereotype, someone's idea of what a guru should be. First thing, you should smile all the time. And if you're a male, you should have a big beard. That's also very important. And if you speak in a somewhat effeminate voice, who's that, Sri Sri something? Somewhat effeminate voice. And you talk a lot of nice-sounding things which have no practical application, and they don't really mean anything. And maybe you quote sometimes a little bit of Shastra here and there, and that's a guru. And the main thing is to make people feel good. So there's so many cheaters. So in this atmosphere too, order. It may be that the disciples, they're really not ready for that. And maybe another thing is, even if they are ready to do that, the consequences of that is very difficult to predict in this very strange society we live in. So, in my case, I tend to give general direction. Yes, we should establish Varnashram. This is the stand. This we have to aim for. And then, for instance, and then exactly what you should do, that also has to be worked out in relation to others also. So the whole society doesn't become disturbed. And then it becomes antithetical to Krishna consciousness. So it's a very strange time we live in, as you've all probably noticed. Very strange times. But still, we have to try to establish Vedic culture, which means Krishna consciousness. It's not that we're just interested in Vedic culture for the sake of it, but the essence of Vedic culture is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness, essential within Krishna consciousness, is that one should accept a guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered Rupa Goswami to compile a book of directions for devotees in Bhakti Yoga. His first directions that Rupa Goswami gave, under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was Guru Padashraya Tasmat Krishna Dikshanushikshanam Vishrambhena Guru Seva. So the first four of the 64 injunctions that Rupa Goswami gives, First is to take shelter at the feet of a guru, Guru Pada Ashrayas Tasmat. Krishna Dikshanu Shikshanam. One should accept initiation is number two. And number three, one should accept instruction from the guru. And with much affection, number four, affectionately, one should serve the guru. Nirvicharam, that should be the general attitude, without the faith that the guru said to do this, we should do it. One of Srila Prabhupada's most important and pressing and prominent instructions is to widely distribute his books. In one purport in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which means shortly before Srila Prabhupada passed away, he wrote that all activities in the Krishna consciousness movement are centered around distributing books. Now some devotees say, well, what's the point? What's the result? Better we preach in other ways, try some other thing. And books don't seem to have made that much effect. Has anyone heard these kind of things being said? Yeah. It's better to try something else. The books are too heavy. People can't understand them. We should write other books that people can understand. I know that at least one guru in our movement who's not present now, he told his disciples, you distribute my books because people can relate to them. They can't relate to Prabhupada's books, which is probably true. The only thing is, in his books, you won't find Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we have to surrender to him. It's more things, social issues and how we can get free from psychological disturbances and this and that. So probably people can relate to them more, but the problem is you can read them day and night, but you won't become, you'll never learn that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there may be various objections which could be discussed, but there's no real need to, because it's Srila Prabhupada's order is so strong on this point, that strong and repeated, that we are duty-bound to distribute his books. As Srila Prabhupada said once, I blindly follow my guru, and he was speaking about the production, and because that was his guru's order to him. If you ever get money, print books. So such an order, of course, it's not that we're completely blind in following it, but there's no question of rescinding it. We have no authority to do so. And as I mentioned yesterday, quoting Vijay Prabhu, that in his travels all over the world, he finds that so many people became committed devotees of Krishna by reading Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Srila Prabhupada also said that our aim is to give an idea of Krishna consciousness to the masses. So it may not be that they all become devotees, but from the books, they'll get some idea. When I first came to India to stay, I first came in 76, I came with the idea of staying in 1977, which more or less I've done since then. It was very, very difficult to preach. That was my experience. Because as soon as you say Krishna is the Supreme, you say, no, why? It's all the same. It's all one. There are many gods. Shiva, Durga, Mahatma Gandhi. At that time, Mahatma Gandhi was an avatar. I think he's been retired since then. He's not taken that seriously anymore, but he was still very big at the time. In the meantime, this Shirdi Sai Baba has come up as the big god of the most foolish people, and there are many of them. So it's very, very difficult. They say, what do you know? We're born Hindus. You can't be a Hindu. Maybe in your next life, but we know all these things. It's very, very difficult. The Mayavad was so thick you could allegorically cut it. It was But now it's different, and people, generally not everyone, but many people, especially younger people, are quite willing to accept when we speak Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why is that? Well, I ascribe that to the massive distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books. People are reading, they're getting that idea. So we should follow the order. That is the basic point of being a disciple, to follow the orders. It may not be that everyone is in an ashram living with the Guru, but that point, the boy is living in the Gurukul with the Guru. He gives an order, do this, do that, go fetch water, go look after the cows. That example is there of Upamanyu in Mahabharata. Go and look after the cow. Then, you're looking very healthy. Yeah, I'm eating. Who told you to eat? I didn't tell you to eat. Oh, okay. Then, unless I tell you to eat, then don't eat. So, drinking the milk of the cows. I didn't tell you to take any milk. So, and still he's looking fat. So, what do you take? I'm not taking the milk, I'm taking the froth. I didn't tell you to take that. And eventually, no food and no instruction. And eventually he eats some grasses in the fields, but it's some poisonous one. He becomes blind by eating that. And then the Guru comes and rescues him and this and that. And the stories are there, how just you follow, that's all. You don't. So in the ashram, yeah, the boys, it's not that, no, I don't want to sweep the floor today. No question. They have to do. In the ashram. Brahmacharis especially. Brahmachari guru kule vasandanto guru hitam acharan dasavan nicho sudhara guru sohridam. The brahmachari lives in the guru kule, in the ashram of the guru, for the benefit of the guru. He doesn't think, what is my benefit? Because he knows that by serving the Guru, his own benefit will be served. But the idea of thinking what is for my benefit, that is to be expunged from the heart of the disciple. Thinking in terms of me, what I want. So he serves the Guru as a menial servant or slave, with an attitude of great confidence in the Guru. Grihasthas, they don't generally have that opportunity to serve in that way. But they can also give their heart and soul in the service of Guru, especially in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. There are examples of Grihasthas who are very dear to Ramanuja and served him with heart and soul, and got his full mercy, especially in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So many anecdotes of guru bhakti and how disciples would serve the gurus with complete devotion, knowing that by doing so, Krishna is pleased. So I'll finish there, and I suggested that a little later, maybe 10:30, 10:45, Bhagavata Anand Prabhu could speak on the 10 offenses. We don't have that schedule.
That's fine. Perfect. 10:45, we can do that.
Yeah, or he can come at 10:30 and begin kirtan, and then 10:45 he could speak on that.
Is he here?
He's probably out preparing. I asked him to do that. And then everyone should be here, especially Mataji, who's coming for initiation. It would be easier for both of them if he spoke in Gujarati, but for everyone else, he should speak. You were asking me to go to Nairobi. You can call Mr. and Mrs. Bhagavata Anand. They can go on. Hare Krishna. We'll break there.